dominates the conversation. And they dominate sports. James Cebulski, Steve Darling, Myra Lawrence. This is Sportsnet's starting lineup on the new home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Very special guest joining us here in studio, one of the most influential globally and recognizable transgender athletes, Chris Mosier, joining us here in studio. Good morning, and thank you so much for hanging out with us and taking time away from your two-hour jog that you go on every... Or not jog, but run. You go for a run.
It's a run.
It's a run, yeah, exactly. Don't call it a jog.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So for everybody listening right now, we hear the word transgender, and we've heard it a lot more over the last couple of years, and I think, obviously, Bruce Jenner and Caitlyn Jenner has obviously raised the what transgender is, what it means, what it's all about. But maybe you can share your story right from the get-go on how you became a transgender athlete and how your process all came to this moment while you're here in this studio now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's important to acknowledge and to recognize that there's not just one way to be a transgender athlete. So I can only speak to my own experience as a transgender man, but I have always felt the same way that I feel now. I was designated female at birth and was raised and socialized as a little girl in the United States and played sports throughout that whole time. But I always felt like I felt like myself, but I was told at a very young age that the way that I was acting or dressing or what I was attracted to was not typical or okay for little girls.
At what age?
I would say my earliest memories of it are at 4 years old.
Really? That early?
Having an aunt pull me around the back of the house and say, you can't run around in the heat of the Chicago summer with your shirt off because you're a little girl. And at 4 years old, I looked at everybody in little four-year-old bodies around me and thought, well, I don't understand what the difference is and why I can't do that when other people can. And so there were a lot of experiences of, you can't wear your hat backwards because people are going to think you're a little boy. And I thought, well, that's fine when I was 7, 8 years old. And that's, I didn't understand what would be wrong about that.
Right.
So I think, you know, for my process, it wasn't.
That's also a generational thing too at the time, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I was 29 years old when I transitioned. And so this was not something that I, you know, while I felt this way, I didn't have the language or the terminology to say I'm transgender.
And how old are you now?
I am 37.
You don't mind it. 37.
Yeah,
okay.
37.
So this is 8 years ago you decided to make the transition.
Which I think when we are looking at social media and we're hearing these stories about young transgender athletes, people think that that's pretty old. And
absolutely,
you know, in terms of now that there's highlights of young people's transitions on YouTube, on Instagram, that's what we know of transgender people, and you know, it's never too late for someone to be their authentic self.
What took so long for you to wait till you were 29 to actually kind of go through the process? If you knew at a younger age that you were walking around without your shirt on, you wanted to wear your hat backwards, why wait till you were 29?
I didn't have the language or the terminology or the understanding of transgender as an identity until I was probably 26 or 27 years old. I didn't go to school with any LGBTQI2S people. I didn't go to college with anyone who identified in the queer community or openly talked about it. And so while I went through a process of understanding my sexual orientation to be queer, my sexual orientation is actually David Beckham, but people just understand queer better.
Right.
but, you know, for me to identify that, but then go, I don't identify with the word lesbian because I don't feel like a woman. And I was in a relationship with a woman. And so, you know, it was this whole process of understanding my personal identity, but mostly in context of how other people saw me. Because as I said, I always saw myself in the same way. And I just wasn't getting that reflected back to me from the rest of the world. And a lot of my process was delayed because of sport. That I delayed my process when I did know that I was trans for a year, year and a half, because I was afraid that I would lose the ability to compete in sport.
Right.
I didn't know what the policies were. I didn't know any other transgender athletes who were competing with men at a high level, and that's what I wanted to do.
So explain to us how that process worked now, because when you obviously make a transition, there's obviously things that have to happen in the sports governing world. So how did you navigate that?
Sure, and it looks different for everybody. There's not just one way to transition.
Absolutely.
Some people do a social transition and change their name and their pronouns or their style of dress, their appearance. Some people do a medical transition, which for a trans man like myself would be taking testosterone.
Right.
And that's what I wanted to do. For people in sport, testosterone is a performance-enhancing substance. And so through a governing body, one has to get approval for a medical necessity of taking testosterone. And so That I found to be a pretty long and invasive process in a lot of ways, to have to give over a lot of medical information to get the clearance to say, yes, you can take testosterone to align your body with how you feel, and this is medically necessary
right.
for you. But also we need to regulate and make sure that you're in the appropriate levels for fair competition right. at a high level.
Because they're coming from a position of never having to deal with this ever. And how to navigate through the sports world is a problem, because there's a lot of, you know, for lack of a better term, dinosaurs that don't understand the way society and the world is going. So they look at rules as black and white. And nowadays, that's not the way the world looks at society. So for them, it was a learning process as well.
Absolutely. And it's different for every sport. And
yeah.
there's not just one policy universal across sport. Now, there's the International Olympic Committee has a policy that was recently changed as a result of my making the men's national team. They revised and redid those rules. But they're guidelines and not policy that everyone needs to follow. And so sport organizations can follow it if they feel that they want to, or they can stick with policies that are really invasive and violate the human rights of trans people and prohibit trans people from participating in a way that's safe and fair.
We were talking to Chris Mosier here this morning here in studio on the home of the Canucks. This is Sports Sticks 50. This is the starting lineup. And Chris, one of the most globally influential and recognized transgender athletes. So to be that person 8 years ago where there's way more of an acceptance now, Chris, but at that time, what sort of blowback are you dealing with and pushback to try to be an athlete to want to compete, especially at an internationally, you know, world-class level? Because you ultimately got there as a triathlete, but I'm sure there was probably a lot of people that were saying, whoa, there were probably a ton of hurdles. You know, never mind just the physical process, but the competition process as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of factors in my personal story because I'm a transgender man, and I think that I inherited a lot of male privilege when I transitioned in sport. People are
How
not
so?
Afraid of a trans man, someone who is designated female at birth, transitioning to compete with men.
You're almost seen as for lack of a better description, an inferior athlete in some respects,
Absolutely.
Right? Well, you can't
Absolutely.
Compete. You're a woman. You can't compete. You can't match up with men that are physically bigger and stronger.
And no one thought that I would be successful as a male athlete. And then when I was successful, I kind of got a pat on the butt and a good job, and that was it. Where we know that transgender women in sport face much more discrimination, harassment, and harder policies against trying to prohibit their inclusion in sport.
Because of that exact reason we were talking about in a
exactly.
reverse effect.
Exactly. And so, you know, the one beautiful thing about sport is that sport is a vehicle for social change. And I think that the very way that sport is set up is that teams are families and that diversity can strengthen a team. Mm-hmm. And we know that we don't just want one player, you know, all players to be able to dribble the ball, but nobody be able to shoot, right? So we all bring our different aspects to a team. And the great thing about my experience was while triathlon, duathlon are individual sports, I do have a team. And I had that buy-in from my teammates and my fellow competitors that I was a good athlete first. And they loved and appreciated me as an athlete. And when I told them I was transgender, they said, fine. And they loved me as a person. They loved me as a teammate and as a leader and as a coach. And so I really had a very easy time in sport in my transition. Now, don't get me wrong. There were spectators who yelled things. There were some competitors who had issues. But mostly when I was androgynous appearing or appearing a little more masculine and was competing with women before my transition. So in that time where I decided that I was trans, that I was living my life as male but had to compete as female, that was my tough time. But as I said, I had a lot of privilege.
What was that part? What was hard about that part?
The toughest part was me standing, you know, appearing somewhat androgynous or masculine, more masculine than the other women who were at the starting
line. And this is before you're starting your transition.
So I would say, you know, transition is a lifelong process. And,
yeah.
and my transition probably started well before I started taking testosterone, that I've always presented more masculinely, that I felt more comfortable.
So before you're taking testosterone,
correct.
It's just your appearance, you're basically trying to look more masculine as opposed to feminine.
And it wasn't, I wasn't trying. That was just what I was drawn to. That's just what
yeah,
I,
right.
how I expressed myself. And, you know, the hard part was being there with the women and going, why am I standing here? And then, you know, feeling, and I don't know if they actually were or not, but my perception was that other women were there going, why is this person here? You know, why are they competing with us? And a lot of that was my own personal perception and fear of what other people would say.
So, Chris, how does a sports organization deal with, as you said, the opposite side? So when you're a physically strong man transitioning to a woman and moving into a traditionally into a female-based sport, how does a sport organization challenge that person may be able to do things that are stronger and set records and things like that? How do you envision a sports organization dealing with that type of topic? Because that's one that's come up a lot.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's just myths and stereotypes. How many times have we had a trans woman come into women's sports and just dominate and set world records?
Right.
We haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
Now, part of that is the environment of sport drives those folks away.
Right.
Sport is not a safe place right now as it stands. In the binary system of male and female competition, for a transgender woman to come in and safely compete.
Absolutely.
You know, without discrimination, without bias. Now, that being said, we know that trans people are driven from sport at a young age, so they're not necessarily invited in to get to that level where they would be competing at a high level. And also that we need to remember transgender women are women, and they belong in women's spaces. You know, the medical research, the doctors and experts say that after 1 year of cross-hormone therapy, so that'd be a transgender woman taking testosterone suppression and estrogen treatment, that they are within a range of typical designated female at birth range of testosterone. There's no physical advantage. And so that's what the research says, that after 1 year, they're on a level playing field.
Right. So how do you get that message out to people? Because you can say that, and I can agree with you on that, but to get the message out to the average sports fan where, I mean, we're reading back studies that say, you know, 81% of Canadians witness or experience homophobia in sports. So we're not there yet. We're not even close to being there yet. So how do we, is it educating young people? And I think that's what a lot of your talk here in BC is going to be about as well, is educating young people, young athletes that we have a different set of athletes that should be allowed to compete and should be allowed to compete safely.
No, I'd say let's talk to the older folks, because they are the coaches, the administrators, the policymakers who are keeping transgender people out of sport.
Right.
Our young people in North America are so far ahead of even myself as a 37-year-old, right? You know, I went through the process of not seeing trans people in sport, and now any young person can look and see several examples of transgender athletes currently competing or competing at a high level like myself.
Right.
And so there is that example. You know, it's not that they have to break through and be the first. I think young people are more accepting of LGBTQI2S identity as
Absolutely.
Well. And so it's
because they're growing up with that familiarity,
yeah. Absolutely.
Right?
So the coaches have to be the ones that learn.
The coaches, the administrators, the policymakers, the superintendents, all of those folks who are setting the rules, who are creating that sport environment. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about today at the Via Sport Pride Forum tonight, and at our training that we're doing today, is talking to BC sport leaders to get them that introductory information, right? You don't know what you don't know. And people don't even want to have these conversations. You know, it's amazing that you have me and you can play here, because, you know, thank you so much for introducing this to your audience, because people don't want to talk about LGBTQI2S inclusion in sport because they're afraid they're going to say the wrong thing or they're not sure about the facts and the information. And so, you know, this is a great opportunity for us to just open the door. You don't have to be an expert on it, but you can start to create small change.
Well, I'll say this. I'll give credit to the BC high schools and the association that they have across the province, where there's been an acceptance and there's been a mandate that you see where there's way more inclusion and accepting in terms of an athlete of what they ultimately deem themselves as and recognize themselves as. And that's great, because we saw the story earlier this year in the state of Texas where we didn't see that. By the way, we're talking to Chris Mosier, a transgender athlete here in studio, talking about inclusion in sport here on Sportsnet 650. But we saw that in Texas earlier this year, Chris, where there was a high school student who was transitioning to become a female, was transitioning to be a male.
Correct.
But the state still recognized her as a female. Yep. And she...
I'm gonna reframe this for you.
Okay.
So it was a trans boy.
Yes.
Who wanted to compete against boys, but the state was saying that because his birth certificates said female, that he needed to compete against girls.
And it was sad, because at the end of it, because the trans boy won,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to compete against boys, but ultimately won the state championship against girls.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hear people in this packed auditorium or arena, and people booing and screaming. And that's got to be so incredibly hard. And look, I mean, you can go and play high school football, and there's good guys and bad guys and heroes and villains and going into hostile environments. But that when it feels like there's just a legitimate hate and lack of acceptance, that's got to be incredibly hard for an athlete.
And he was put in that position by the state of Texas.
By the state!
He wanted to compete against boys, and they said that he couldn't. And he rightfully should have been competing against boys. So you have to think, you know, it should not be the responsibility of a young person who just wants to play the sport that they love to advocate for social change around inclusion. That really is the state let him down. They let all those other student athletes down by putting that rule in place.
Thanks for doing this, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate you taking the time with us.
Yeah,
and,
nice to meet you. Yes. And good luck. And I think your point is coaches and administrators are the most important people to get the message true as well. Because, you know, I took my kids are 6 and 9, and I took them last year to the Pride Parade for the very first time. And I explained to them why we were here and what we were here for. Mm-hmm. Now they kind of get it. Even at 6, he kind of understands. And so when you talk to your kids and explain to them, they grow up knowing that this is just normal. And that's what you have to understand. But you have to get the people who run the organizations to change that. The NHL just came out with inclusion policies for the first time ever. And that's governing all of hockey. And there's not a sport, I think, more than, you know, that needs that than ice hockey. And so that's a positive step, but there's more steps that need to happen.
Absolutely. And the bottom line is that if you can play, you can play. And
absolutely,
that's why I'm so happy to work with the organization You Can Play, which works very closely with the NHL. We did Hockey is for Everyone month in February.
Brian and Patrick Burke, big parts of that.
Absolutely.
That started.
And the bottom line is that athletes should be judged on their character, their desire to play, their work ethic, all of those sport components, and not their sexual orientation, their gender identity, or any other factor. If you can play, you can play.
Hey, if people are listening right now, they have a question and don't know really where to turn, you're on social media. Where can people reach out to you and find you?
Absolutely. You can find me at the Chris Mosier, M-O-S-I-E-R. Also, check out youcanplayproject.org. Check out the Via Sport BC website, and there'll be more information there. Our partnership with You Can Play and Via Sport is going to be groundbreaking in Canada. We are pushing forward sport for all people to make sure that everyone has equal opportunity and access, as well as information, resources to provide the most supportive sporting spaces for all people, athletes, coaches, and fans.
Chris, thank you so much for doing this. Thanks for joining us this morning. And when you get back to Chicago, can you fix my Chicago Bears for me?
Oh, good luck.
That's right. I wish.
Right, and we'll hang out more because we won't run with you because you're too
good.
Your runs
run
are
now.
Too long and too fast.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
can't do it.
Slow it down. We're more of a slow jog.
That's like a walk.
Honestly.
You're on the West Coast, Chris. Yeah. It's time to slow down,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Go find a dispensary or something. Chris Mosier making tremendous inroads in the sporting universe, and the message is simple. If you can play, you can play.
Sportsnet 650.